The main political parties fighting for your vote in the general election have all published their manifestos this week, setting out their plan for the next government. But what's in the manifestos relating to local shops? Where are they similar? Where are they different? And why do manifestos matter? All this on this episode of the Local Shop Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce. This is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, as is the case for whenever we're looking at political hijinks and election news, I'm joined by James and Ed to discuss the latest. And it's been a particularly busy week this week with the publication of the manifestos for the main parties. We've had hundreds of pages of documents for the team to get through, but we're hoping in the next 20 minutes or so to demystify all of that and to give you the information you really need about where the main parties stand. So hi, James. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Chris.
Initial thoughts from this week then, and we're going to get into issue by issue how the launches have gone and where the parties sit. But James, I'll come to you first. Initial thoughts on this week as the manifesto launches. Anything that particularly surprised you, or is it sort of by design that everything is reasonably low key?
Yeah, I think what struck me this week after looking at manifestos and the launches is actually most of the ideas have been trailed some time before, either in the campaign or before the campaign. So there's a sort of sense with the manifesto result, nothing new here. And that may have been the case. It doesn't mean there isn't actually quite a lot of policy in all the manifestos. It's just a lot of it was trailed beforehand. I think we'll come on to talk about the living wage. That surprised me how the parties handled that in their manifesto announcements. But, you know, essentially, I think most of the things here we'd seen being tried. I'm thinking about things which are relevant to the convenience sector, but also more widely relevant in the election. So I think, you know, maybe a sense of, of not a lot of news on the day, but actually some quite chunky differences in the manifestos across the piece, as we'll come on to talk about, perhaps. Not quite as many differences on the issues that perhaps matter most to convenience stores.
Yeah, and Ed, you've been through a couple of election cycles. Did you get a sense that the more things change, the more they say the same? Were there a bit of copying and pasting from 2019?
There's definitely some consistency of challenges that we see through and issues that haven't been addressed over the last parliamentary term that we're seeing come back into the manifesto documents, particularly around business rates and empty properties on high streets and looking at how we deliver those types of reform. But I think what surprised me this week is actually about how it's taken this long to get the real focus on tax policy, fiscal policy and the economy. I thought that would have come up sooner, but we've got to the manifesto week and really most of the conversations that would have cut through, I think, have been around the tax policy and what the next government will do and how honest all of the parties are being about how big the challenges they'll face when in office.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's on that kind of fiscal policy that I'd like to begin and talk about employment. And one of the things that we had considered ahead of the election and before the manifestos came out was that because the Low Pay Commission have a remit that had essentially stopped in terms of the long term in the most recent change to National Living Wage, we thought that there may be a bit of a race to the top, race to make the biggest number possible in their manifestos. But looking through the various manifestos on employment, Ed, it looks like that's not the case. What are we seeing that's different from the main parties on commitments around wages and employment rights?
So there's still a focus on the future of wage rates and this link to the cost of living crisis and wanting to make sure that they show the need to reflect that in future wage rates. But that hasn't translated into a figure. It's translated into a change in approach around how wage rates are set in the future. So the main, main parties looking around how they account for the cost of living crisis in managing those wages, but also looking at the wider labour market and how they make it more flexible for people as well. So a more rounded discussion around the future of the labour market instead of just focusing on wages.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting the way that the different parties have gone about this. So I'll give you a few examples. So Conservative manifesto talks about maintaining the 2/3 of median earnings target with a forecast to reach 13 £1 per hour by the end of the next parliament. The Green manifesto puts a number on it. It says increasing national living wage to £15 per hour. And then when you look at the Labour manifesto, it does it slightly differently. So there's some concrete stuff around removing the age brackets for national living wage. Currently, if you're 18 to 20, you're on a slightly lower bracket. But it talks about changing the remit of the Low Pay Commission to account for the cost of living. James, do you think that's, without naming a number, do you think that's a way of saying we will look at higher increases in the national living wage, but we don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, full disclosure, I got this completely wrong. I thought ahead of the manifestos, we'd have this real auction, like you're saying, of parties quoting numbers. And we may, yeah, you know, maybe a part of the rest of the campaign that the parties want to illustrate their policies with numbers, and that might happen. But so far, that hasn't happened. I think that does that commitment does give Labour enough scope to go for bigger increases if that's what they want to do, if that's what they feel they want to do going forward. It should be said as well, though, that we're hopefully entering a period of slightly lower inflation. Therefore, the cost of living driver of any future living wage might be less than it would have been had that been a key factor for the last couple of years. The other factor, of course, is that point about age bands. And you know, our members do use the age bands, particularly for you know, students, part-time workers, things like that. To have a slightly lower rate for those that's available to them. There's a really key difference here in terms of the wages and statutory minimums for those under 18 and those over 18. So of course, you can't sell alcohol unsupervised if you're under 18. So there's a material difference in how you can operate the store. But no, I think that Labour have given themselves a bit more wriggle room. But from the point of view of our members, I was quite relieved there wasn't a commitment to a figure.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting talking to members that they're very keen on finding ways for the government to be able to offset their costs as employers. And there is a bit of that around the edges of some of the manifestos. So if you look through the reform document, they talk about tax relief for businesses that take apprenticeships. If you look at the Green document, they say, yeah, we're going to increase national living wage to £15 an hour, but that will be offset for small businesses through their national insurance contribution. So there's a bit of that around the fringes, but certainly for the main parties, the main two parties that we expect one of which to form the next government, nothing in there about sort of offsetting or even anything really about employer national insurance contributions. We've heard a lot about employee national insurance contributions as a lever for reducing the burden of taxation, but certainly our employer next, that's something that we would expect hopefully some kind of action in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months, depending on who gets in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that whole argument of offsetting, which we've made as arguments quite a lot, whether that's through other employment legislation, business rates, other incentives, support. No one's engaged with us as far as the manifesto goes, but I'm sure we'll come on to talk about, you know, the manifesto and what happens in government can be slightly different things.
Mm. So let's move across to another issue that is absolutely front of mind for retailers and where there's actually quite a lot of consistency across the main parties, and that is crime. And for context of this, we were in the midst of the Criminal Justice Bill going through Parliament, which included an amendment to introduce a separate offence for assaulting a shop worker. And that's something that had cross-party support. So it's not necessarily surprising to see that in the Conservative manifesto and in the Labour manifesto, they both talk about toughening sentences for assaults on retail workers and introducing that specific offence. I think, Ed, would you say that's reassuring news that we're getting that commitment from both parties, and perhaps a quite high likelihood that that will come in the first, you know, the first year of a new government, whatever colour that is?
Yeah, it's very reassuring to see that that issue is front of mind in the manifesto documents from the main parties. But I think not only the standalone offence, but the commitment around recognising the challenges that policing is facing and the justice system is facing is what's driven the consistency. Because for voters, I think safety in their communities has become a top issue. And that's why you're seeing it front and centre of all the manifestos. And that's important because Actually, what makes a real difference, I think, around retail crime that retailers face is around visible policing, is around neighborhood resources on policing, so that retailers can essentially have a connection with the local police force and people feel safer locally. And this comes through in our data all the time. When you ask in our community barometer report around what people want locally, they say about investing in public space and around CCTV. When you look at our crime report, you can see that levels of antisocial behavior have been rising. So a real focus on trying to address those issues is really key for us and the communities that we serve. So it's reassuring that they're looking specifically at standalone offense, but also the wider policing resource and the issue of community safety, which we are central to as we're sort of responsible retailers in our communities and lead a lot of behavior change.
Absolutely right. And one of the things that leads to people feeling safer is having police officers locally, having police officers in the beat. And it's interesting to see how many police officers is enough police officers, I guess. I mean, it's going from one end of the spectrum, which is reform, looking at 40,000 new frontline police officers, all the way down to, well, if you look at the Liberal Democrat manifesto, it doesn't really talk about a number of officers at all, nor does it talk specifically about retail crime. Were you surprised at all by, given the profile of retail crime over the last 18 months at least, to see that not more prominent in all of the manifestos? James, I'll come to you first.
I mean, to some extent, no, there are obviously lots and lots of issues that go into governing a country, and therefore lots of issues go into a manifesto. So you know, we have to recognise that while retail crime has been a long way up the public agenda in the last couple of years, that there are, you know, many other things that they're focusing on as well. I think one of the reasons it probably hasn't been a big dividing line in these manifestos, so, you know, certainly between Labour and the Conservatives to the same extent, and they're talking about similar kind of policies but often expressed slightly differently, is that actually the current government has got a grip on this in the last year, certainly in terms of identifying the right things that need to be done. And there's consensus about those things. It's about better reporting, investigating every crime, not letting police forces impose arbitrary limits on what crimes they can and can't or will and won't investigate, better investment in the court service, better investment in rehabilitation, and say the key thing about reporting and investigating, and a much swifter response to violent crime. Now, all of that is something that this government has landed on in office. Now, perhaps we haven't seen the fruits of that yet. I'm not saying we necessarily would have done had this parliament run on for another 2-3 years. I don't know. But in a way, the Labour and Conservative agenda on this is pretty similar. It's pretty similar to the Retail Crime Action Plan we saw last autumn. And so that's really reflected in the manifestos, where they're saying quite similar things in slightly different ways. Labour has that slightly greater focus on the neighbourhood policing guarantee and that talk about antisocial behaviour and those that sort of language, which I think is very sort of consistent with their overall messaging coming into the election. But no, I was in a way struck by how I think there's a real consensus has been established. Neither party would admit that, by the way, but there's been a consensus establishing those parties on what to do. As we always say, it's all about doing it. It's just all about, you know, this is not solved by a plan or a bit of paper, even if we've written it. It's about what happens on the ground across every police force and ultimately, you know, every officer in every court responding appropriately to this very serious problem.
Perhaps, to build on that, of course, the question always ask yourself in manifestos is who has to deliver the pledge? And to a certain extent, police and crime commissioners now have to take on the baton of the delivering the policing resource. So there's a national commitment, but it's police and crime commissioners that will think about how they prioritise that resource. And for us, as well as looking at manifestos and talking to whoever is leading the Home Office, it's also going to be about making sure police and crime commissioners have retail crime front and centre of their plans, which will be, you know, coming out in the autumn. So a real focus on talking to them is important too.
And it's really interesting because there isn't necessarily consensus on the role of police and crime commissioners. I mean, there is across Conservative and Labour, but it's probably one of the very few things that the Liberal Democrats and Reform agree on, and that they both think PCCs are not fit for purpose and should be scrapped. So, you know, some common ground for Nigel and Ed to talk about while they're next on their water skiing holidays. I want to move on from crime now and talk about something where, again, there is not necessarily consensus. And this plays right into Ed's point about when you actually have to deliver it, it's a problem. I looked at the 2019 manifesto, and the Conservative manifesto said, we will conduct a fundamental review into the business rate system and look at fundamental reform. And if you look at Labour this time around, and if you look at the Liberal Democrats this time around, they're saying they will replace business rates with something else. Ed, given that the business rate system is basically a zero-sum game, how difficult is it to replace it with something else that doesn't look like basically the same thing that we've got right now?
Yeah, reform and complete scrapping of the business rate system is really hard. It's really hard on a number of different levels. One, to build consensus about what that looks like, but two, also to find a way of delivering that easily from a sort of centrally driven tax that raises a lot of revenue when the government is already under a lot of fiscal pressure. They don't have much room. So replacing it is really hard. And of course, you could go wrong with what you replace it with, and it'd be a more disincentive for businesses to invest and harm more places. So for example, a turnover tax or a sales tax, I think, would be much more difficult for high street businesses, for retail businesses, because you know high turnover, low margin businesses would be hit harder by those types of interventions. Things like land value taxes, which is essentially what the Liberal Democrats are proposing, could work, but there's a big transition across, and of course it would cause a lot more sort of appeals in the system, which would reduce the certainty of the income centrally. So it's not easy, and that's why I think they've landed on most of the language in the manifestos has landed on how do we rebalance the existing system to reflect how the economy is changing, which is basically more sales going online. That's not reflected very well in the business rate system that's based around property. And that's probably where we're going to square off. So I think, you know, whoever leads the next government, in the first fiscal event, they will commit to doing a consultation and look at these options again. And we've got to be prepared to engage in that and come through with pragmatic solutions. I think our starting point is, how do we make the system work better to incentivize investment rather than ripping it up completely and trying to start again, given everything I've just said?
Yeah. James, I suspect throughout your tenure at ACS, there's been conversations about replacement of business rates. Do you think you will ever see it happen?
That's a really great question. I mean, firstly, Ed's answer, there's everything I wanted to say on business rates. And I think, goodness me, it's a really good question. I think I've probably got to vote no. I mean, you know, I just think it is such a reliable tax for the government to collect. You know where the business is. You're collecting against the property. When you look at the other options, they can sometimes sound seductively simple, most notably a sales-based tax. But as Ed said, that'd be really bad news for our members, who are relatively low-margin businesses. I mean, particularly people who deal a lot with fuel and services. I mean, that'd be an absolute disaster potentially for them. So, yeah, I think it's really... I think it's really, really difficult to find a replacement that's any fairer or better than the current system. Hopefully something which was based around, if you like, the opportunity to trade. That's why business rates exist. It's a tax on the opportunity to trade. But, you know, maybe you have to, think about what the opportunity to trade means in the modern world, and then to apply taxes accordingly. But no, I think it's very difficult to find a solution. And, you know, working with the system as it is, thinking about greater incentives, better reliefs, better targeted reliefs, investment incentives, a better balancing of online and bricks and mortar, not because we want to punitively punish online, but because it is imbalanced at the moment. It's not fair at the moment. And I think that might take us towards something more sustainable. But yeah, it's a great question, Chris. And I'm afraid I find myself voting that I'm not sure we ever will see it replaced.
Yeah, it's something else to think about as a sales tax. When you think about the current business rate system, it's very reliable. It's very dependable. Mm-hmm. A sales tax would be extremely volatile.
Yeah.
And for something that should be pretty consistent every year, there would be a lot of flicking around an abacus in the VOA to try and make that work every year. So
a lot of avoidance as well. I mean,
yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
One of the reasons there'd be a lot of accountants being employed to. And we've seen it already with some companies where they put their profits. You know, particularly you've got online companies. Or where do you put your sales then? You know, how would you? Now, I'm sure that, you know, there'll be answers to that, but there'd be big companies finding ways around this, and small ones probably.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the last issue I want to just explore in a little bit more detail is public health. And if we're assuming, based on the polls, that Labour are going to form the next government, this is actually one of the areas affecting retailers where they've said more than anyone else, I think. So they're talking about introducing a generational tobacco ban. That will come as no surprise because we had the tobacco and vapes bill well on the way in Parliament before that had a lot of cross-party support. They're talking about a ban on vapes from being branded and advertised to appeal to children. Again, similar to the way that they talked about the low pay commission and cost of living, it's a little bit vague, but leaves them a lot of room to play with for restrictions there. Banning advertising junk food to children. So again, something that's been talked about a lot, but haven't necessarily seen action on. And a ban on the sale of energy drinks to under 16. Ed, this feels like a lot of policies that are well-worn and well-trodden coming to fruition eventually. It seems like we've been in this debate on those areas for quite a long time now.
Yeah, I think the manifesto showed that there's a consensus around the smoke-free generation policies, which is, you know, 5%, only 5% of the population smoking by 2030, and taking action on that. So what we saw in the last parliament, I imagine, will be very consistently same approach in the next parliament. I wonder how much further a Labour government might go around vaping interventions through the bill, and looking at the bits around packaging and display and all of those things that we'll watch closely, but generally consistency. Less detail than I expected around interventions on food and advertising restrictions on high fat salt sugar products, because we're having an interesting debate across the UK where Scotland and Wales are considering further interventions on those high fat salt sugar products, but nothing further jumps on that in the manifesto documents. But these are difficult policy issues to express well in manifesto documents as well. So I think you're right, Chris, more of the same in this space. And actually, we have to wait for lots of the detail and further consultations to really get a sense of the implications.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I guess this is something we probably should have led with, but now that the manifestos are out, and they, you know, they will essentially be the blueprint for hopefully some undecided voters to make their decision on which policies that they most identify with. James, why do manifestos matter? Do we even need manifestos? Why are they important when we've got all of the other campaigning around the election as well?
Yeah, I mean, historically, manifestos have had, you know, a sort of quasi constitutional status, in the idea being that if something's in a manifesto, that gives that party a mandate to implement that policy. And that still holds. I mean, that's still, you know, you'll hear David Cameron's maxims was, you know, I won't break a manifesto pledge, and, you know, recognizing that, you know, if you do that, you lose that credibility with the voters. And that's not to, you know, obviously many things David Cameron did or didn't do that people may not like, but it does have a separate status when you make that commitment. It's been seen as almost a contract with the voters. And this is what I've said, we said we'll do, we therefore have a mandate to go and do it. I think in reality, two things. You know, one is so much of politics is reactive, and, you know, faced with different situations, governments are doing different things. And, you know, you can imagine after the 2019 election, within 3 months, you had a pandemic, and kind of, you know, all bets are off, aren't they, in terms of how governments might react to that, whoever's in power. So, and I think the other thing is just the sheer volume of state policy statements that are now made. Now, on the one hand, that makes manifestos less relevant because we're hearing so much about what each party might do or what they think of the other party's plans. That debate in the manifesto is a smaller part of that. But maybe it means that the manifesto itself is a bit more important because it's the thing that can kind of cut through and has a status more than a tweet or whatever, the post on X, they call it now, don't they? Or you know, some sort of TikTok video. You know, what is a commitment? Each party saying all these things, all these different candidates saying all these things, what matters? Well, I suppose it's the manifesto that matters. It's the manifesto that sets out the programme for government. Yeah, but in reality, taking it too literally is probably also not an effective way forward either. So, you know, they really do matter. And I've been really struck this time how so much has been said before, as I said earlier, that maybe the announcements of the manifesto don't feel that big a change, but there are distinct differences between the parties' manifestos. And, you know, that's ultimately what people will be, in theory at least, voting on.
And James, it doesn't have to be anything particularly that relates to local shops, although beneficial if it is. But has anything this week surprised you, particularly about manifestos, not necessarily like EastEnders or anything?
Yeah, I mean, Ed Davies' commitment to the Lols, I think, is amazing, and that continues to surprise me. We've got a couple of weeks left, so let's see where he takes this next. I think I say that I got living wage wrong in terms of how the parties might approach that in an election cycle, for sure. And I think the other thing, which I guess isn't necessarily a surprise, but it's just my whinge, you won't be surprised to hear him say this. I am struck, we see so many of these policies, particularly the public health ones, how there's nothing about enforcing that. And there's nothing really about how local government funding has been stripped away for years and years now. And you may say, what's that got to do with local shops? But actually, if you're bothered about having rules on vapes or on HFSS or alcohol or tobacco actually enforced, then that is something that should bother us. And it does worry me that there's a risk that for that reason, some of these manifestos exist in a slightly theoretical world rather than in terms of practically what we see on the ground. But that is the techie point, which I make in every single opportunity, because I think it's so important.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be that difficult to cost either, because you take them out of column A, which is illicit trade, and you put them into column B, which is trading standards enforcement, and those two things balance themselves out. Anyway, so if you are interested in the manifestos as an exercise in deciding who you're going to vote for, we have a manifestos at a glance document, which is on our website. Please check that out if you haven't had enough of the detail already. And we have a breakdown, if you're a member of ACS, of each of the manifestos that will be in your inbox as well. So please do check that out. It is surprising to say that we do have a few weeks left of the campaign. I think if we went to the polls next week, I think everyone would be broadly relieved that we wouldn't have to go through this for another few weeks. But we do have a few weeks left of campaigning. Ed, for anyone listening to this thinking, what have we got left? What else can we do in this campaign? Unless you're a Davy and you're just looking to get 2-for-1 in Thorpe Park and Alton Towers, what can retailers do to make the most of the rest of the campaign?
Well, I think now we've got the manifesto documents, there will be a lot of focus on in-constituency engagement from the candidates. There's lots of change planned, potential change coming up in this election. So they've got a lot of new candidates looking to introduce themselves. So actually embrace that, see it as an opportunity. As much as the campaign feels like it's rolling on, it is an opportunity to sort of engage with your future MP. So we encourage you to think about inviting your candidates standing in your end area in your store. Tell them about your business. Tell them what the manifestos mean for them, and they will really embrace that. They want to see what businesses are thinking and feeling, what their communities want. So go on to the election centre. You can have a look at how you can contact your parliamentary candidates, share a briefing with them. And of course, there's lots of other content as well that focuses on the things that we've discussed around different policy issues on high streets and crime and enforcement, as James just mentioned as well. So lots of materials to support you to engage with your candidates.
Great. And there will be thousands of hard copy packs going out to retailers as well, hopefully in the next week or so. So do look for that on your doorstep as well. It's quite rare now that we have the opportunity to actually physically mail stuff out to people. So please use those campaign packs when they come through. I'm going to finish this episode with something slightly technical, but something that I think will hold us to account. And I'd like Ed and James, both of you, to predict the next name for the Department of Business and Trade, because we've had in the last 10 years, 5 or 6 different names. And I suspect if we do get a Labour government, it will be called something else. So I'll hand over to Ed first. The next name for the Department of Business and Trade, and please don't put an official wager on it, but we will clip this if it comes to pass.
Well, I think we might go back to some reference to industrial strategy in that title. So I'm going to go back towards trade and industrial strategy. So go old school, very, very retro name for the department, but there we go.
Nice. James.
Okay. I think we will see the Labour Party are, and I'm assuming they're going to win the election, but we'll see. So if they're in government, there'll be much of an emphasis on working people. You hear Ed Davies say working people almost as much as toolmaker. It's a phrase he uses a lot. And I just wonder, given that Department for Business and Trade now has employment regulation under its remit, whether there might be something more explicitly in there about workers or employment or employment relations or something like that. So yeah, business and employment or something,
Right.
business and jobs, something like that. I don't know.
Okay. I'll make a call. I'll go Department for Growth and Skills,
There we
which
go.
I'm
Good
sure
chat.
degas, which I'm sure won't happen. Right. So that is the end of this episode of the podcast. Thanks to James and Ed for listening in and taking part. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us pontificate about the election. If you do have any questions about anything in any of the manifestos or anything around the election, do just get in touch with us, pick up the phone or send us an email, and keep up to date with all the latest information about the election all the way through the campaigns at the ACS Election Centre. Just go to acs.org.uk. There's a big blue bar at the top. Click on that and it'll give you the latest information.